Abayis, I must share with you that I saw a story today. It's worth interpretation. Unfortunately, the main part of the story, I don't know who it's actually about. I believe it's about, it's a shin of a rov. Rabbi Feingold will fill us in with the Hasidic genealogy there. Is it shin of a rov? Was he a son of Divichaim? Okay, I believe it was shin of a rov. Divicheskel, yeah, okay, could be it was him. So the story goes like this. Somebody, it was just when, I don't exactly, what years did the cars become more, cars were a bit more industrialized, to switch from horse wagons to cars, when was that?
30s.
In the 30s? Yeah. So he was just approached then, and people went up to him, you know, with this great invention, how great it is, that, you know, he can move on from the horse wagons to the cars and everything. Mind you, I must tell you, I remember my grandmother told me that she lived in Debrecen, and her father was very wealthy. Don't worry, there's nothing left of that. She was very, very wealthy. And they were the first ones to buy a car in the area. Debrecen was a big place. And first one to ever. And she told me that they bought this car, which she told me the name of the, but I forgot what it was. It must have been probably in the 1920s, I mean, because she was a young child then. So, and she said that they got this fancy new car, but then there was one problem. They couldn't drive it. They didn't know how to drive it. So after spending all that fortune on the car, they figured out that they can't actually drive it. So point was made by having a good car, but he couldn't drive it. So they had to employ a chauffeur. They employed a chauffeur, which that itself was a very, very vast expense. But then they figured out that it's just too expensive. And once they made the point, as she told me, they made the point that they can afford the car, and they had the car, and they could even afford the chauffeur for a few months. They went back to the horse wagon after that. He was much more practical. So, but the Shinovarov was approached, and go back to Shinovarov, and he said, you know, how great it is, that people can have cars now, we can move on from the horse wagons so much faster, so much more reliable. And so much better and everything. And Shinovarov then replied and he said, actually, he's not so excited about it. Why not? He said, because, you know, until now people realized that that animals, horses, donkeys and everything, they're all here for us. They're all for us. And humans are greater than animals. And animals are here for us, to support us, to help us with our tasks. And now that we are moving away from that, and we have no more donkeys and no more horses to schlep us around, and we're going to the cars, he said people are perhaps going to lose that perspective. And he said, is something getting lost with that? A bit of something getting lost with that. So, and that's what he said. And he, therefore, he wasn't so excited about this move in this very huge step in the industrial revolution, or whatever. It was not industrial revolution, but in that important step, he wasn't so excited about that. Art Khan, the story. There's two things I learned about it. First of all, I think it's very, very, there's an enormous foresight to that story, because he realized that it's true that over the generations, people are much more now, it's not politically correct anymore to say nowadays that animals are here for us. Sometimes it's the other way around, really. Yeah. And we're all, you know, the all that discussion about the animal rights. I mean, well, animal rights and the like. Whilst, of course, we have to protect this. You know, the Torah says we have to protect the animal, we have to protect the environment, but they're here for us, not the other way around. So that's the enormous foresight. But I think even more important, and perhaps even more relevant for nowadays, is that not every technical advancement is necessarily good. Not everything which really is a step forward is necessarily for our own good. And the reason why I've thought of that is because over the last year, people were so... there's so much technical advancement was made because of the... I suppose, you know, there was the... what they call the silver lining of the virus. There's so much things that normally would have taken 10 years to happen has suddenly picked up in... And not necessarily everything which has been called an advancement is not necessarily an advancement. Some things, you know, is not necessarily so great. So that's basically what I wanted to share. So I'm saying, of course, a Zoom bar mitzvah is a very nice thing, but... It's much better to come in person. Mishpachas Berlin, Mazel Tov again for the bar mitzvah. Yeah. Okay, Rabbeisai, we're up to Simon Tov Kuf Nun Gimel, Din Sud Amavsekas. Some interesting halacha, and this is the Simon, not literally the Simon, but within this week, Be'ezer Hashem, we are going to be touching on one bi'alacha that speaks about a pandemic. A pandemic bir halacha. Watch out, a pandemic bir halacha with very interesting medical implications as well as advice. So we're going to get to that, not tonight, I'm afraid, but we will get to that interesting bir halacha, which really gives us a bit of an insight about how the Chofetz Chaim looked at the pandemic. So, we have spoken about already quite a lot about the Sudam of Sekes. Now we're getting closer onto Tisha B'Av. So, Aval B'Sha'achal Sudam of Sekes. So although a person may ate during the Sudam of Sekes, he's allowed to eat again. You finished Sudam of Sekes. All right, you had your bread, dry bread. You had your water, very nice. You're still a bit hungry. Okay, you benched already. Without a zimun, you benched already. Can you eat a bit more? After Sudam of Sekes, can you eat? You still got another 8 minutes left. Can you still have can you still have one? So, although you ate Sudam of Sekes, you can still eat. So it does not mean that the fast starts when you finish the Sudam of Sekes. Rather, you can't still eat afterwards. Elim Kain, unless you have explicitly accepted on yourself that you are going to eat. You're not gonna. If you said no, I'm not gonna eat anymore. That's it. I'm accepting the fast. As a default, if you don't say anything, you can still eat afterwards. The answer is no.
Then you have a cream cake.
Right, I hear what you're saying. So the cream cake example, the point is that Sudam of Sekes is a halacha. You must have the Sudam of Sekes. It symbolizes the morning and taka the chuban. It doesn't mean necessarily that you have to finish and you have to start fasting with it. So
it feels like a bit of a stirrup, you know. Sudam of Sekes.
Yeah. Something else. Are you okay with having water afterwards, but not the cream cake? Or you say that generally should finish altogether?
The same thing that you had for the
right.
I think it's better to keep the cake
after the fast. Yeah, it's probably true. No, it's true because I'll tell you what I agree with you with I agree with you because we said you can only have one tough shell and there's all the restrictions why you're not to Sudam of Sekes. Right, now you've benched. So now in theory, you're saying that's really what you're saying, you could have another cooked item at that stage. Nothing really stops you from that. It's not Sudam of Sekes. So that really defeats the purpose of Sudam of Sekes. Good point. Good point.
And come to think of it, we could do it the other way around. We have a bigger meal before and then we have Sudam of Sekes.
You could do the other way around. Yeah. It's a good question. Valid point. Yeah, he should certainly refrain. See, Ramon continues and says, the Kabbalah believe ain't no Kabbalah. If you've accepted it, that's an important rule, Rabbi Yisai. What if you decide, okay, that's it? Like, I'm not going to eat anything afterwards. But you didn't say it verbally. You thought about it. You thought about it in your mind. Right? Can you still eat or not? In other words, if I say after the Sudam of Sekes, I am now accepting the fast, then it goes without saying, it's obvious you've accepted the fast. What if you don't say it, but you think? Is that considered a acceptance of the fast, yes or no? So the Mordechai tells us, v'kabbalah belev, ain't a kabbalah. If you're just accepting it in your heart, in your mind, that's not considered acceptance. In other words, after the Sudam of Sekes, if you say nothing, but you think, I'm not going to eat anything anymore, and you still get hungry afterwards, you still want to have a bit more water, a bit more bread, or whatever it is, you can still eat afterwards again, since you didn't verbalize it. The Mishnah Berurah in Sifkot Beis disagrees. He brings opinions that disagree with that. He brings from the Bach that no. If you just thought about it, that is considered a Kabbalah, and that's too bad. You can't eat anything anymore now. Although you didn't verbalize it, but you thought about it, that's a Kabbalah. Now Rabbi Yisai, that therefore leads us to the best practice. What is best practice halacha? So what's the best way forward after sudam afsekes? What's the best way to allow yourself to still eat or drink afterwards? What's the best way to do it to avoid any problems? You make it tonight. So the best way is to literally say after the meal, or before benching, or whatever it is, Abu Sai, I'm not accepting the fast at this stage yet. I'm not accepting the fast. Then you're clearly allowing yourself to still eat afterwards anymore. If you fail to say that, you can still eat, but it's much better to actually verbalize it. It is not opposite. It's in line with that. It's in line with the chum of the Mishnah Berurah. It is right. It's not required, according to the Shulchan Aruch and Ramah. It's not required. Definitely not. You don't need to. According to Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, you don't need to. According to the Bach, which the Mishnah Berurah quotes in the Vilna Gaon, it's good.
It just says that Bach just says that it's called Kabbalah.
It's Kabbalah, yes. So, but
if you don't mean any Kabbalah at all, then it's nothing.
Yeah, you don't need to. I know, but often what happens is that people think that perhaps they concluded in their mind a little bit. It's very hard to. A mind jumps and it's not reliable. So, in order to avoid any OCD kind of feelings, perhaps it did. So, if you clearly verbalize and you say, then you know you're out of any suffix. But of course, you're right. This is a Chumri Yasera, and you're right. If somebody is quite confident in himself that he never had in mind to accept the Tanis, then you're right as well. You're right. No, it's not neither.
Can he change his mind? Can he be shoyel on it?
If he was a couple. Yeah, l'choyer you could be shoyel on it, but yeah, l'choyer you could. Look, the Mishnah Berurah says at the end, I'm at the end of Sifkotten base. Mikol mokim nochen yoyse lehasas beferish befeu belev she'enu mekabel olav atainis had ben hashmoshes. Mishnah Berurah likes the idea of verbalizing you're not mekabel the tanis. It's good practice. It's the best way forward.
Even though, like, Kabbalah
Belev
is not Kabbalah,
but
therefore you can carry on eating. You carry on eating your.
He's, no, he's choylik. He says, Kibbel Beferish. The Shulchan Aruch says, if you're accepting explicitly, only then. And the Ramah says, yeah. Okay. The Mishnah Berurah does point out this is not with regards to an innocent sandal. That's a different shandal. Innocent sandal, shoes is not wouldn't be including that. Save base. Tisha B'Av, Leiloi Kiyoi Melechol Davar. Famously, Tisha B'Av is different than all the other fast days. Why? All the other Darbonon fast days start when? By daytime. Tisha B'Av ever starts? By night. Just like Yom Kippur. Tisha B'Av, Leiloi Kiyoimoi. It's night is like it's day. Lechol Dovel, for any matter, for any halacha, same halachas by day and by night. Ve'inoichlin, we do not eat. Elo only mi b'doyim before Shkia. So by day early. Uven Hashmoshes Shaloi, and Ben Hashmoshes Shaloi, also Yom Kippur. And Ben Hashmoshes, in the Shkia time, is also like on Yom Kippur. You do not eat anything. All the restrictions apply already. But of course you're allowed rechitza and sicha like in the 9 days, you'd be allowed until ben hashmoshes, but not after that. We'll leave that for a moment. Now with regards to ben hashmoshes, so ben hashmoshes, the Mishnah Berurah says ben hashmoshes shaloi also, the shkia time is also, hainu ben b'chnis also ben b'itziosa, whether it is shkia before Tisha B'Av starts and Ben Hashmosh is at the end of Tisha B'Av, both all the restrictions apply. The question is, we've got a common question, Rabbi Yisai. Are you allowed to sit on chairs or must you already sit on the floor after Shkia?
Fast is in.
Fast is only, you sit, yeah? Starts with Shkia? So, what the Shulchan Aruch says is Ben Hashmosh Shloi also Kiyom Kippur Umotah Bechitz V'sich Benizah Ad Ben Hashmoshes. Yeah, so afterwards, yeah, so Lemaise said there are some poskim who say that perhaps you'd be allowed to still sit on chairs until Nacht. Lemaisa, the meaning is to be machmir, but it's to note that there are some poskim who are meikel. Because it's not nacht yet. It's not really nacht. It's not yet. Okay, now the going to the shaila of Shabbos Tisha B'Av on Sunday. Do you need to make a? Let's see what the Gemara says. Says the Gemara, Miu Bechol Noagin Lachloitz Minalaim Kodim Shemu Bochu. On a regular weekday, you take off the shoes before you say Bochu. It's talking about an early Maariv. You take off the shoes before you recite Bochu. Ve'imu Shabbos, and if it's Shabbos like this year, Chol Tzim La'acha Bochu, you take off the shoes after Bochu. Milvad Shliach Tzibah, excluding the personal davens for the Amot. Koidem Bochu, he takes off before Bochu. Rak oy matchila amavdil, you should recite the amavdil first. Rabbi Isai, very important question. When do we change shoes? This year, on Tisha B'Av. When do we change the shoes? Shabbos. Before Shkia. What is after Bochum?
It's curious because you can't eat after Shkia.
Very good. So
it's a bit of a steer, isn't it?
Absolutely. Very good. So we have got a bit of a problem over here. On the one hand, it's Shabbos. Shabbos, we cannot show publicly any avelus. Only Dvarim B'Tzinim will talk about it.
Do we mimad
Oinik Shabbos?
Yeah,
well, because
they're
still eating Shalashudis. We said that what? It has to be like Shlomo Melech.
I know, but you have to bend it by Shkia. You can't eat after Shkia.
Yeah, can't eat after Shkia.
Shlomo Melech, why can't it be Shlomo Melech until Naft?
You're right. So by Shkia, obviously, we can't eat anymore. But until Shkia. So what about the other restrictions? What about the shoes then? So I understand I must stop eating before Shkia. I understand. But what about shoes? Shoes. What do they do with the shoes? Can I show publicly? It's a catch 22. On the one hand, I can't wear normal shoes because it's already like I can't eat. It's after Shkia, it's already Tisha B'Av. But on the other hand, I can't show public avelos. I can't show public avelos. It's Shabbos. So what do I do?
It's an active thing, whereas wearing shoes is a shabbat al tasa. You know, you just not.
But not to wear shoes is also public display.
No, but you're already wearing your leather shoes, so you're already wearing your shabbat shoes.
You're wearing shabbat shoes, so right?
To change them in the middle of shabbat before shabbat is out is a maisa avelus. Whereas to stop eating, it's a
right. So to says no more. Indeed, you can continue wearing your shoes. Continue wearing your shoes until bochu. Pa bochu, you change. So koydim shema bochu, veimu Shabbos chol tzim lacha bochu. After bochu, you change your shoes. Now the Mishnah Berurah says in Mishnah Berurah's change in Seif Kotten in Seif Kotten Vav, veimu Shabbos, if it's Shabbos chol tzim, to also Shum simen avelus b'Shabbos. You're not to make any public display of avelus. V'lo yigah b'hem b'yadav. Don't touch them with your hands. Yitzorich litol yadav. Because if you touch your shoes with your hands, you've got to wash them. Huvidevet im noge inake b'yadav b'chol mididim t'minake. If you did touch them, you've got to rub them and you don't wash with water. So, in theory, so the problem is, you're not allowed to wear publicly Tisha B'Av shoes. No, the other ones you can't really wear leather shoes either. Nothing really stops. In Etzon, I think that's what they do. If I'm correctly, there's nothing really stopping doing my 5 minutes later or a bit later. What do you gain from doing that?
You haven't taken
Shabbos out. So you say Mavdil, Bochum Mavdil? When it's Nacht, you say Bochum Avdil, you put on Tisha B'Av shoes, and you go to shul then. Nothing really stops from doing that. There's nothing really stopping us from doing that. And I believe in Etzel, that's what... I think that's when Etzel, that's the common minig. Pardon?
They start
Maariv a bit later, right? I think that's what we used to do. Do you remember in Etzel, that's what we do, no? I think that in Etzel, you do... If I remember correctly, Motzei Shabbos Tisha B'Av. Motzei Shabbos is 10 minutes later, 5-10 minutes later. Maariv is 10 minutes later. You change into Tisha B'Av shoes by Nacht. And you go to shul with nothing recently. I don't know why it's not.
Sorry, you have to go home.
Yeah, so people are normally at home.
At home?
Yeah. After Mincha on Shabbos, you stay at home. You have Shalashuris, whatever, you stay home, and then you're going to come from home. Exactly. So nothing really, and the point I make, nothing really stopping us from doing Ma'ariv a few minutes later and then changing. Prior to that, by Nacht, changing into Tisha B'Av shoes. However, you cry right here, the meaning is that what do? We wear Shabbos shoes until Nacht, and Baboch, you change. Everybody runs out, changes shoes, and that's probably what we're going to be doing this year again.
It's probably more to do with the fact that Chutz La'aretz minhag is to do Mincha and then stay in shul.
Stay in shul.
And do bits and pieces, learn, and stay in shul tomorrow. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, it's more of a.
When you stay in shul, you have to go eat to the Rav Circuit.
Yeah, I suppose it can be done before Mincha, yeah.
I suppose. Each individual minion is in minions, a separate minion, though you double in different shuls, Shabbat, Mincha, tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying is true as well. The shuls are generally no more than 3-4 minutes away. They're all very close, yeah. People don't walk so far. Yeah.
It might be to do with that, but rather than. It might be to do with the fact that it's more of a fluid thing than Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, definitely much more fluid.
One shul. And
yeah. So people generally don't sit on chairs.
But not on Shabbos.
Yeah. So on Shabbos, the Mishnah Berurah says that you don't have to make Shimon Avelus, and therefore Shabbos you're going to be sitting on chairs. Yeah. Regular weekdays you don't. Shabbos you do. Yeah. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah says over here. Yeah. Now, why is it that the Shliach Tzibur choylets koydem bochu? Why is it that the Shliach Tzibur, he changes the shoes, Omar says, he changes shoes before bochu. Everybody else, we go on Motzei Shabbos. Everybody else says bochu, then we change shoes. The Chazan, however, he is to change shoes before. Why is that?
Cover
that tzibur.
Cover
that tzibur. I see. The Mishnah Berurah says. That's interesting. It's good. I know it's interesting. It's a good point. But the Mishnah Berurah says, "If gotten zayin koydem bochu, mipnei atiruv." He's going to get all confused. Kedei shelo yire inu b'shabbos emetchila amavdil v'lo shemalchus yishzei amavdil. He said, "Mipnei atiruv." He's going to get all confused. It's going to be too confusing for shliach tzibur to start changing shoes once he's there. You know, once you double the armut, you can't sound so being busy with shoes and everything. Take
off. I thought it was to do with being with that is like saying it's no longer Shabbos.
Yeah, no. Why should you do like the Tzibur?
He should like the Baruch, then
he should change like everybody else.
No longer Shabbos.
Yeah, I know, but
so he should say beforehand.
He can't say Baruch on his own.
You mean there's a proof for
that? Yeah.
So he changes before.
The Shliach Tzibur, being the only one, he changed before Bochu. Because he's going to get all confused.
Why don't we also?
Everybody else, because we are not going to get confused. For us, we do the ideal. Bochu is still part of Shabbos. But Bochu changes. We say Bochu is still in Shabbos shoes. Then we change. It's not Hefzik really, because it's not Hefzik really, because you haven't started Birkas
Shema. You're not meant to talk after.
You Taka don't have to talk. You don't have to talk.
I know you're not talking about it. You see from that halacha that's a bit of a hefsek.
Yeah, all right, okay, but it's still better. Out of all the alternatives, it's probably the best one. Rabbi, we learned this evening that after Sudha Masekis, one may still eat, unless, says the Shulchan Aruch, you've explicitly become Mekabel the fast. The Ramah says, no, if you haven't accepted in your heart only, that's not considered an acceptance. The Mishnah brings stringent opinions that even after that, it's much better. There is opinion that holds that in your heart, if you're mekabel the tanis, it's still considered a kabbalah. Therefore, best way forward is to to say explicitly you're not accepting the fast. On Sharetzin Mishnah Berurah says you don't need to, on Shabbos it's not necessary. Tisha B'Av, the halachas by night are the same than by day. There's no difference. Ben Hashemosh is also. We are accepting the Tannas on Shabbos. We're accepting the Tannas. We have to change shoes by after saying Bochu. The Chazan however changes the shoes before Bochu, and there's nothing really stopping us from actually going to shul after Nacht and changing the shoes before that. Okay, good evening, everybody.